Welcome to As for Football's Army Football Show. The Army Football Show is an insider's guide for cadets, old grads, and college football fans to follow the Army team throughout their season as they seek to beat Navy and claim the Commander-in-Chief's trophy. As for Football's Army Football Show is brought to you by Emblem Athletic. Sign up at emblemathletic.com and be a gear hero for your unit today.
Boy, do we have a special show for you. We have a very special guest joining us later in the show. But, you know, in the meantime, I'm your host, Jordan. I'm in Atlanta. We have Dan in Coastal Connecticut, James in Texas. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the As for Football Army Football Show. Dan, how are we doing?
Yo, man, we are awesome. We just recorded a great interview with Army Athletic Director Mike Buddy. We're totally looking forward to bringing that to everyone out there. But before we get to that, as a reminder, this show is brought to you by Emblem Athletic. Emblem is the source for all of your custom sporting goods needs. Let them trick out your unit today, whether that unit is military, police, fire, or just your flag football team. The nation is coming out of lockdown pretty soon. That is ending. It is time for each and every one of you listening to this to get off your couch, go directly to Emblem Athletic and order some of their great high quality custom made gear, be that unit, sports team, whatever. They have artists. They make it easy. You just go on their website, answer a quick questionnaire, and then they lead you through the rest of the process. Look good, play good, feel good. Emblem Athletic can help. Be a gear hero for your unit today. All you about to graduate, firsties, about to be second lieutenants, we know that your first job is going to be to get unit t-shirts. I'm telling you, do yourself a favor, emblemathletic.com.
Awesome. Thanks, Dan. James, how you doing in Texas? Is it still hot or is it cold or what's going on with the weather?
It is a breezy 80 degrees today. It's beautiful down here.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, James, we're going to jump right into this. We need to keep this short because we have a fantastic interview with Mike Buddy. Can you take us through some Army sports recap?
Absolutely. I'm going to have Dan go through the upcoming lacrosse game against Navy. But just to go back over what's been going on, big story is Army baseball started out the season 3-11. They're now 500, 15-15. And they're 9-6 in Patriot League play and in a great position to win their division and get a 1 or a 2 seed in the Patriot League tournament. So kudos to the Army baseball team, Jim Foster, the coach, and all the players who literally turned their season on a dime. Dan?
Yeah, that's wild, man. I can't even believe it. Early in the season, I was like, ooh, these guys are not that good. I've watched them play a lot, and they are really good. It's been fun. Sure. As we are recording this, Army-Navy lacrosse is this weekend, tomorrow. However, by the time this comes out, that game will probably be over. We are assuming that your number 8, 9, 10 Army lacrosse team has beaten Navy, hopefully, God willing. But it's a big game, and I hope you watch it. I am fired up about it because it's going to be awesome. And also, while we're talking about it, let me take a minute to plug our spring football preview articles. We've got two out there. James has got one coming out next week. We tell you about what Army did in the spring, and we're telling you about what all of Army's opponents did and are doing with their spring football camps. So definitely check that out on asforfootball.com.
Awesome. Thanks, Dan. And with that, we are going to go right into the interview with Mike Buddy. Stay tuned. It's a good one, and we'll catch you on the end. Thanks. And now we have a very special guest joining us for the show. We have Army Athletic Director Mike Buddy. Mike, thanks for joining the show. How are you doing today?
I'm doing pretty well. You know, it snowed yesterday and today it's 65. So welcome to the Hudson Valley, I guess.
Welcome to West Point. You got to love that West Point weather. Speaking of West Point weather, you went to school at Wake Forest and then you were the AD at Furman. So would you consider yourself like a Southern gentleman, or have you kind of adopted the Northeast as home?
So, well, I'm certainly no gentleman. Let's get that clear. I would say I'm like a gentleman transplant. So I grew up in Cleveland, but okay. as a baseball player, you know, Cleveland weather's not exactly hitting on all cylinders either. So I transplanted myself to the South. I married a Southern woman. And was fortunate enough to kind of bounce around and live all over the place in the South. But you know what? Coming back here, getting some real snow in the winter has not all been terrible. My wife may tell you something differently, but I would say I'm a transplanted Northeast, Southern, Midwestern, non-gentleman.
So you're very cultured and very well traveled. So we can appreciate that. How was Wake Forest? You know, being as a student athlete, do you feel like that experience prepared you for, you know, being an athletic director? And why did you choose Wake Forest?
So, yeah, so Wake was a great experience for me. And I really had two experiences. So one was as a student athlete the first time. And then the second was as a grown-up. You know, I had to go back to school. I was 34 years old with a wife and two children when I was a full-time enrolled senior. So
wow.
It was different to get to go back to college as a grown-up and actually, you know, want to learn about things as opposed to doing it when you're 18, 19, and 20, and you're just kind of thinking, well, you know, if I can get a C in this class and get drafted, everything's going to be pretty cool. So I had two distinct kind of really unique experiences at Wake. So the first 3 years, great. What attracted me really was a small school, a really solid education, and it was in the Atlantic Coast Conference. So as a, you know, a ego-driven high school baseball player in Cleveland, you know, I wanted to get a chance to go south and pitch against Clemson and Georgia Tech and North Carolina because none of them recruited me. So from that angle, it was really a great experience. I got warmer weather. I got to focus on just one sport and then going back there to as an employee after my baseball career ended was a great opportunity as well to actually learn the business side. And that definitely translated into the opportunity that I've got right now, which is, you know, the dream job of working at West Point and having impacts on young cadet athletes.
Absolutely.
Well, that's kind of what I wanted to ask you about, Mike, is just, you know, you're one day you're standing there on the mound throwing for the Yankees in the World Series, then in Milwaukee. And, you know, at what point did you start thinking you wanted to manage college athletics? Because I got to be honest, that's not an obvious career path to me. It's fascinating.
Yeah, well, and that thought certainly didn't hit me while I was still standing on the mound. I mean, we're all stupid athletes and, you know, you never anticipate your career ever ending, right? I was just going to pitch until, right, you know, I was 63 years old, like Satchel Paige or something. But you know, honestly, I always thought that I would play professional baseball for, you know, maybe 3 or 4 years. They'd realize I wasn't that good. And then I could go into a coaching job or a front office job. And then, you know, something strange happened and I stuck around for 13 years. Wow. And by the time my career was over, all the coaches and front office people that I had respected and come to develop relationships with, literally every single one of them except one was divorced.
Oh, and wow.
It just illustrates the stress that lifestyle puts on a marriage. And so I kind of shifted gears and, you know, I did get an opportunity to pitch in the big leagues and, you know, got to check off a lot of pretty cool bucket list type of items. And I was content that I had had that opportunity and I didn't feel the ego drive to be the general manager of the New York Yankees or the Cleveland Indians. And then I started shifting thoughts thinking, well, I don't want to work every night and every weekend either, like every coach of college and professional sports do. And so, you know, I was the cliche washed up professional athlete that goes back to his alma mater and starts, you know, being a fundraiser. But that was the first step for me. And honestly, I learned 3 years after that, after starting as a fundraiser, that if I had to fundraise for the rest of my life, I was going to stab myself in the eye. It's such a tough gig. And doing it at your alma mater, you know, all my buddies from college would stop taking my calls because they figured I was calling and asking for money. And so I kind of fell into the athletic director realm just by eliminating things that I figured out I definitely didn't want to do. And then at some point, like being the boss was the only thing left. And I thought, well, hey, that sounds pretty good.
Oh, that's amazing. And then you went from there to Furman and then on to West Point. So now that you're here, can you walk us through a day in the life of the Army athletic director? Because I got to be honest with you, I would have bet money that you were working, you know, nights and weekends. Just, you know, just like you do at West Point.
Well, I absolutely do, but the difference is I kind of get to pick which nights and which weekends. And so okay. I've got two kids. One is a junior in college, actually at Furman University. So he had just finished his freshman year when I took the job at West Point, and you know, we ditched him and said, "Hey, you want to come enroll and enjoy the 47-month experience as a cadet?" And he said, "Hell no, I'm staying at Furman."
Smart man.
Yeah. So he stayed down there, and my daughter, who's a junior in high school, she came up here with us. But yeah, every day is different. What I have learned in being surrounded by colonels and generals is, there's an expectation that when the superintendent calls me, my whatever is scheduled doesn't matter. Which I say that because that doesn't happen at Furman or Wake Forest. People kind of say, "Hey, you know, what does your calendar look like next Tuesday?" And when you're dealing with 3 stars or 1 stars, they just say, "Hey, I need you to come over here," and that's what you do. And so, depending on what the reason for that, "Hey, come on over to my office," is, you know, your day can take a big U-turn in a heartbeat. And so, you know, I probably spend 30% of my time dealing with cadet athlete and coaches, and just trying to figure out what we can be doing on a daily basis to provide just an extraordinary Division I experience for those young people. And then, you know, dealing with coaches, trying to help them navigate COVID testing or scheduling or contract disputes or, you know, hiring or firing coaches. Oof. And then probably 30% of my time is kind of externally facing. So, you know, retweeting just awesome content for my friends at As for Football. Reaching out to the old grads to share the vision for the renovation of Mikey Stadium, you know. Yeah. Taking care of our athletic director circle donors, planning events and things like that, which certainly have taken a backseat with COVID, but that's still a big part about what we're doing. And then probably 30% of my job is navigating the world of USMA, right? It's so right. Unique here. The challenge is just how important the relationships are between faculty and military instruction. The AOG folks, you know, all of that really matters on a day-to-day basis. So just making sure that everybody who is affected by the decisions I make understand why I'm making them. And, you know, my first year on the job before COVID hit us, you know, I tried to spend a lot of time with sergeant majors and, you know, people who have been in the Army. The superintendent was really intentional about, you know, he sent me out to Fort Irwin to experience the National Training Center. And because as a civilian, you know, like you kind of, you know, I spew the lines, you know, we're here to educate, train and inspire cadets and all that's true. But he made a great point, which is unless you understand what we're training and inspiring them to do, you're not going to be as, you know, authentic as you can be. And so, yeah, so I got to sleep on a Humvee in the middle of the desert. And
yeah.
Shivering through the night, but it was meaningful and it certainly impacted me. And, you know, I have so much respect for what these young people do. So, you know, I don't have the courage or the discipline or the intellect to have chosen the path that they and so many others have chosen, but I do need to have a true appreciation for what they do. And so I try to spend a lot of time with people who have done it, who have served, so that I can help, you know, in any way, kind of, you know, plow forward for our cadet athletes for what they're about to get into.
Absolutely. You know, I always wanted to go serve out at the National Training Center, and I guess I could have if I'd stayed in the Army longer. But yeah, I'm a little jealous. Your opportunity to sleep there on the Humvee. It sounds idiotic, but I enjoyed that one quite a bit when I did it.
Well, you know what? It's pretty cool when you know that you're getting out of there in 48 hours. Probably less cool when you're there for, you know, for 2 weeks and doing it every night.
Yeah, it has its moments, I guess. So how's your family adjusting?
You know, fairly well. You know, I moved a ninth grade daughter from home in Greenville, South Carolina up here. And yep. one of the great carrots that I dangled was the New York City, you know, area, and being 40 miles from Manhattan was a huge draw. She's a big fan of theater and shows and food. Oh, yeah. And so it was great for about 9 months when that was in existence. And then, you know, COVID hit and we've all been kind of, you know, not just the Buddy family, but, you know, the mental health and just the fatigue and, you know, the COVID wear and tear certainly has an effect on all of us. And our cadets are no certainly not immune to it, probably have gotten hit harder than anybody. But, you know, other than that, you know, we loved having, you know, football Saturdays at West Point are just exceptional in every way. And, you know, I have a tailgate at my house after the games, and, you know, it was awesome. And then, you know, when COVID hit, everything kind of screeched to a halt, but it's a great place. It's a great community up here at West Point. We're about to go through, you know, this summer where, you know, the turnover that happens is about to happen. I think, was it PCSing that everybody, you know, you get new neighbors, and I'm about to get a new dean and a new commandant. And, you know, those are challenging and great opportunities to replace two of the four board of directors members.
Your neighbor Ray is a very good longtime friend of mine. So I know that you're going to get at least one new neighbor.
Awesome.
So anyway, yeah. Go ahead, Jordan.
Yeah. So Mike, you hit on a lot there. You go from Furman to West Point. You're at West Point for a year, and that's a huge adjustment in and of itself. And then COVID happens, and you know you're at the helm of the athletic department at West Point, and I'm assuming within a matter of days, everything just kind of blew up, and the fall football schedule blew up, and, you know, are we going to play? Are we going to shut down? Are we going to have cadets back on post? All that happens. And, you know, you're directly involved in that. So can you kind of take us through that first week, 2 weeks, and then kind of some lessons that you guys learned within the athletic department?
Yeah, so certainly a lot to kind of unpack. Ironically, I had just landed in Greensboro, North Carolina. I was doing some Founders Day speaking engagements in Greensboro and Charlotte. I talked to the superintendent before I left and really kind of updated him on our wrestling team was getting ready to go to the NCAA championships. Mm-hmm. Our baseball team was going on a spring break trip, and you know I was going down to do a Founders Day gig. And when I landed and I got in my rental car, the soup called me probably 45 minutes later and just said, "Hey man, this thing's kind of escalated pretty quickly. You know, you probably need to just turn around and get back here. 'Cause you know, who knows, they're talking about shutting things down." And, you know, just like all of us have those stories. And so I turned around and came back to West Point. And I remember calling the commissioner of the Patriot League. And she just said, "Hey, it looks like we're going to hit a pause on all of the basketball stuff that's going on because, you know, all the presidents are a little bit concerned about this virus." And I said something to the effect of, "Well, we're not going to quit. So, you know, if you're going to shut down the Patriot League, then we're just going to call, you know, the ACC schools or whoever is willing to play us, and we're going to play us." And to her credit, she kind of just said, "Hey, you know, if that can work for you, then have at it. But, you know, I don't think that's going to be an option." So, obviously, within two more hours, every conference basketball tournament had shut down. And so she obviously knew a little bit more or had done some more homework than I had. But then, you know, you asked about what did I learn in the next 2 to 3 months? Well, you know, the manpower at West Point is amazing. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like there's a rabbit colony of colonels that you look behind the curtain.
I got to write that one down.
You think, you know, you know that there's 18 colonels that live on your street, and, you know, you rub elbows with them in the academic board from time to time. And then you just walk into a room and there's like 73 colonels, and they're just like just ripping out, "Well, here's what's going on in the Barbados. And here's, we have 27 students in Germany and 13 in Europe. And they've all got flights, and they've all, you know, here's where they are. They're all accounted for." And, you know, that doesn't happen at Furman or Wake Forest. And so, honestly, I tell a lot of my colleagues at civilian institutions, like, there may not be a better place on the planet to be than West Point during all of this.
Yeah.
One, because, you know, we can control posts, we can control who's coming on and who's leaving. Two, we've got a student body that for the most part does a pretty good job of following directions. And number three, you know, I work for a guy whose previous assignment was stamping out Ebola in Liberia. So if there's any dude on the planet that could possibly help come up with a manual to get you through a global pandemic, it's General Williams. So, you know, I just learned, and I shut my mouth. I listened, and I kept a journal, just kind of like decision making and decision points that these people were coming up with, just to help me in terms of future leadership opportunities and leading through a crisis, because, you know, we kind of had the who's who of of leaders to kind of work us through that. And that's from, you know, General Milley to McConville and all the way down, you know, Ryan McCarthy was the Secretary of the Army at the time, was just great communicators. They kept us in the loop. They allowed us to take a little bit of calculated risk. You know, you talk about our football season, we went from a 12 game schedule to 3 overnight. And without the support of that group in the Pentagon, and certainly, you know, Lieutenant General Williams here, without them saying, hey, we trust you and we'll help you figure out a way to meet requirements, and we're going to test and we're going to do it safely, but yeah, keep finding us football games. You know, that meant the world.
It was amazing the way that you guys recovered, the way that the whole team recovered. I mean, you know, obviously it wasn't a great season in terms of just managing it across anyone, but Army had a great season in many ways. It was super impressive.
Yeah, it was special. So, you know, I've got a great relationship with our coach, Coach Munkin. And he told me two things. One was the graduating class of seniors. I think they needed 8 wins to be the winningest class in Army football history. And they were just a phenomenal group of guys. So we wanted to find a way to give them the opportunity, at least, to hit that that goal. And then number two, he just said, hey, Mike, schedule whoever you have to schedule, whenever you have to schedule them. You know, you don't need my blessing. I am going to tell our kids to prepare to play Army football. And if we get, you know, obviously a week's notice would be great to let us know who the heck we're trying to defend. but he said, you know, you can call me on a Thursday and say, hey, we're playing Tulane on Saturday, and we're not going to be disappointed, and I'm not going to be upset. We're going to go out and play Army football. And so, you know, for the most part, we were able to give him a couple weeks notice, but it's just a huge relief knowing that your coach has that attitude, because you just knew that the guys on the team were going to adapt the same attitude. Like they weren't panicked. We, you know, we scheduled BYU, which would have been an absolute heavyweight brawl. Ultimately they were unable to make it out here for the game, but you know, our guys were just like, that's all right. Whoever I line up against, I know how I'm supposed to block them and what I'm supposed to do. And I'm going to try like hell to do it. And it just, it kind of took the pressure off of us who were trying to fill in that schedule.
Yeah. It must be, I don't know if special is the right word, but you know, us at As for Football look at Coach Munkin and we're like, he is the absolute perfect person for this job, you know, at West Point, because he'll play in a parking lot. And like, he says that all the time and it's a buzzword or whatever, but like, I honestly think he means that. And he just is phenomenal. And it's really important. I think, you know, like you spoke about, to the culture and just the ability of the team to just say, hey, we're going to play whoever you guys put in front of us. So to that end, if you could, would you give Jeff Munkin a lifetime contract at
yes.
No yes. hesitation. Okay.
Yeah. So there's a lot of things that are kind of broken in college athletics, in my opinion. And you know, I will leave my personal thoughts out of this, but you know, recently the University of Kansas extended their basketball coach and signed him to a lifetime contract in the middle of an FBI and NCAA investigation.
Wow.
Which, you know what, they may, I'm sure they have inside information, and there's a great chance that there was absolutely no wrongdoing. But the optics of offering a contract of that magnitude in the middle of an FBI investigation as an institution of higher learning could give off the wrong signals. And so, you know, you asked that about Jeff Munkin. So his position here at West Point is completely genuine and authentic. Mm-hmm. He is the most West Point Army dude that I know who didn't go to West Point and didn't serve in the Army.
That's awesome.
He is completely bought into the warrior mentality. He's just got the ethos of, you know, take no prisoners, fight to the last breath. His players have completely bought in and play that way. And yeah, I mean, he's got the lyrics to the songs and the quotes from the generals, and he's a great representative. He's a great man. And the beauty to in a lifetime contract. So I think Jeff is 53 if or somewhere around there. He just celebrated his 39th birthday for the 14th consecutive time, I believe. but you wouldn't know it, right? He's built like a 26-year-old, and he's got the energy of a 19-year-old. And so, You know, that's one guy that you don't have to concern. You don't worry about him doing anything improper. He expects a lot out of his guys, but he follows the rules. And so he's going to coach as long as he wants to coach, because I just know that the work ethic and the attitude and the energy are always going to be there. So, absolutely. I would love for him to be here another 15 years and have a statue of him somewhere up there next to Coach Blake, because what those types of guys do to this institution, and it just resonates across the country. If we can keep beating Navy in every December and keep that Commander in Chief trophy where it belongs, he's going to have a job here as long as he wants.
That is very good to hear. I personally think that he should already have a statue for ending the streak, but
oh man,
we'll see if we can raise some money for that. So
that's an easy one.
So we're talking about current sports and coaches. So I'm going to talk about some different coaches. I don't know if you know this. I swam at West Point, and one of the first things you did when you stepped on post was to hire a new swim coach. And you then also hired a softball coach, and we recently got a new women's basketball coach. Can you tell us sort of what you look for in a coach?
Yeah, absolutely. So, softball and swimming and diving, those literally, so the softball coach, the hire was made before I physically had set foot on West Point. And so she was a great example of someone who had won at an extremely high level. She won, I think, 3 D3 national championships at Tufts.
Right.
And then, you know, our swimming coach came from NC State, which is a great program. And this is his first head coaching job. And then women's basketball most recently was similar to our softball coach, in that she was a D2 coach at Adelphi University. And so, you know, we develop a profile, and the profile is not the same across the board. So each sport, you know, based on the reality, you know, you have to kind of define the reality of where you are. So swimming and diving, perfect example, as you know, Crandall Pool's delightful and it's charming. it is not state of the art.
Right.
Yep. It is not exactly, you know, mold free like a lot of swimming facilities, you know, all those things. So you have to define your reality. If Jeff Munkin left today, you know, the list of people who would be interested in coming to coach at Army West Point would be much more clear, and you'd have a much better outline and resume that you could look at to kind of see their background, as opposed to swimming and diving, where,
right,
you know, you look at an assistant coach and try to realize, hey, can they make the jump? And so we talk a lot about who the mentors are for these coaches. You know, are they learning from guys or girls who are doing the job the right way? Are they winning with integrity? Obviously, any experience at a school that has similar challenges, which is much more difficult at West Point, because we don't ever want to seriously consider hiring somebody from Air Force or Navy, right? But in a perfect world, maybe they worked at Air Force or Navy a little while ago, and they got out, you know, they came to their senses and went somewhere else. Obviously an academically driven school, a school that has challenges, is certainly attractive to us. And then it comes down to, you know, who do we call? We don't ever call people's references. So if you applied for a job and you said, hey, here's my 3 references, those are the last 3 people we're going to call, because we know that you've prepped them, and we know that they're going to tell us whatever you told them to tell us. And so, you know, that's the great part of having a senior staff like I do at West Point, where I've got, you know, Christine Fowler, who's been at Indiana and Kansas and Nebraska and Miami of Florida. And, you know, Mike Harity's been at Notre Dame and Minnesota and Kansas as well. And so, you know, I rely on those people and their networks, as well as my own, to call people who knew somebody that worked with this person. And so those are the references. And you just say, hey, don't worry about whether they can do X's and O's like that. We'll figure that out. Tell us what kind of person they are. The best recommendations you can get is if you find somebody who played under that coach. And that's important, because you know, cadets here are not on athletic scholarships. And so if they're having a crappy experience because the coach is, you know, a yeller, or, you know, you can ask a lot of young people if they know you care about them. But if you don't care about them and you're just coming out there to yell and you're going back to do, you know, Sammy or something the next morning, like, it's gotta be enjoyable to compete in athletics at West Point. So it, you know, we tell our coaches it's not for everybody. We almost try to scare them away and just say, hey, you realize you're going to bang your head against a brick wall, right? Every school, you're going to be recruiting a candidate, you know, who's looking at Iona and Fordham. And Iona and Fordham, they're going to be allowed to be paid for their name, image, and likeness. And, you know, they're going to be allowed to do, you know, they can wear any kind of clothes they want, and they have to work for you for four years, and they can take whatever job they want. And, you know, here it's a different pitch. You're going to have to sell them, you know, you're going to get them for 9 years, and they're going to get up at 5 a.m. and you can't comb your hair the way you want to comb your hair. And so, we do make sure that they know absolutely 100% what they're getting into. And sometimes that scares off some candidates, who might have been high on our list. But we'd rather that happen before they sign a contract than to have them here and realize a year or two in that you know, it's not what they were expecting. And, you know, you don't want people that are making excuses that just say, hey, you can't win here, because we think that's BS. We think for the right kid, you can win here on the highest level.
Well, that's definitely true. Let me just tell you what I heard is confirmed, definitely replacing Crandall Poole. Can I get that on record?
Yeah, December 2022, it'll be completed. A brand new natatorium. All we need is one donor to step up.
One donor with the entire trust fund. Yeah, okay. Oh, man.
Dan,
you got any money laying around?
Yeah, not that kind of money, unfortunately.
All right, well, we'll work on that for you. Mike, you also hired a softball coach, women's basketball coach. You kind of touched on that. Is hiring in the middle of a pandemic easier or more difficult? Because you can kind of look at it a couple of different ways. You know, athletic departments across the country are going through some cutbacks and some shortages and stuff. And I know at Army, you know, we've had our share of layoffs and stuff like that. I know you guys have made some changes with memorabilia and stuff to try to raise money. So what's it been like to try to essentially rebuild some of these programs in the middle of a pandemic?
Yeah, I think that's a great question. It kind of depends how you look at it. So when the pandemic first hit, you know, we had a lot of meetings with head coaches talking about how do you recruit kids during a pandemic. And so what I will say is, early on, I think it was a huge advantage to West Point. And I say that because, as I mentioned, I have two, a college age kid and a college recruited kid. And most parents who are involved in their young people's, you know, upbringing, you know, they're concerned about, you know, getting an education that matters and, mm-hmm. and being associated with a brand that has a certain cachet. And so, you know, sometimes, sadly, you know, a young person will make the decision to go to University X over West Point because they have a better locker room, or, you know, they have a swimming pool at the dorm. And again, as a parent, you're just like, hey, I get it, but that's probably not the best way to make your decision. And so I say that just to make sure that our coaches were selling the fact that the brand of West Point and the connection that you will make and the long gray line and the reality of it will put you in a position for the rest of your life. And by the way, you will graduate from West Point with money in your bank account and not one penny of debt. And so, you know, that's how we sold it to the cadets. Now, trying to hire a coach, it's interesting because coaches are feeling the squeeze. They see the transfer portal and they see the name, image, and likeness. And so a lot of them who see the big picture kind of romanticize about, hey, wouldn't it be great to go work at a place like West Point where your biggest concern is whether or not your kids shave that morning?
Exactly.
Like that's, you know, those are the things that trip you up. So we had a lot of regional interest from people who had been to Post before, which helps because, you know, if you haven't been to West Point, you don't fully get it. And I say that through the lens of a man who had never set foot at West Point until I was invited to come here and interview. Wow. And you come through the gates and, you know, you guys have done it. You have that holy crap moment of this place is phenomenal. You like it, the feel of it and the beauty of it. And I'll mention it was May when I interviewed. So it was 83 and sunny. So it is. So, you know, we hired a women's soccer coach as well. And, you know, she had never been here, but one of the other finalists had been here before. And, you know, she could say, The facility's great. It's as good as any in the Patriot League because I had coached in the Patriot League, you know, and it's got everything you need. I know the weight room's great. And then, you know, the coach we ultimately hired said, you know, no, I've never seen West Point. And so, you know, we flew her out and just said, hey, get tested, come out here. We'll get you through the gate. But you know, I firmly believe, you know, she moved here from Denver, Colorado, and you don't ask somebody to move them and their loved ones across the country without feeling it and seeing it. And by the way, I knew that when she set foot on post that we could lower the offer because she was going to be hooked and want to do anything she could to come.
Mm. Yeah, that's awesome. And, you know, to your point, West Point in May is just beautiful and it's sunny and the river and it's just, it's very picturesque. So I'm sure that's a great bargaining chip for you.
Absolutely.
And once the world opens up again, you know, just for your family and your kids, New York City, I mean, it's just magnificent in May too. It's absolutely the best place on earth. I'll just
put that out
there. Go ahead. So, Dan, do you want to ask your swim team question or do you want to?
No, I think we got my answer. I'm as soon as I can find $120 million, we're getting a new pool. I got it. I know my mission.
All right, James, Mr. Lacrosse, do you want to take this next one?
I don't think I'm Mr. Lacrosse. I think that's Dan, but we can talk about the Patriot League a little bit here, I guess. Great to talk to you, Mike. Thank you for coming on. And as we know, Army Navy Lacrosse is coming up this weekend. We're all super pumped. It's been over 700 days since we beat Navy in Annapolis for the 100th meeting on an overtime goal. So we're all excited for it to be back. But now there's news coming out, reports of the Patriot League expanding the field to 6 teams for the tournament. And while I'm not complaining because it will likely help both the men's and the women's matchups in the Patriot League tournament, it sort of seems to be that, you know, Navy is going to be the biggest beneficiary here, right? Their men's team wasn't going to make the tournament. Now they likely will. The women's team is having a really bad year, and now it looks like they have a decent shot at making the tournament. And this is sort of the next in a long line of ways that Chet Gladchuk has sort of seemingly exerted his power over the Patriot League. Can you talk to us a little bit about where you see Army in the Patriot League, why that maybe for fans like us, why that seems to be the case, and talk to us about, you know, Army's place in the Patriot League?
Yeah. So, you know, our place right now is second alphabetically. You know, so it's been interesting during COVID, you know, Chet and I, we've gotten a lot of support from the other athletic directors. And it's kind of nice because that certainly didn't exist in the ACC nor the Southern Conference where I'd worked previously, where the other eight athletic directors completely raise their hands and realize that we are a different animal. They know that we have double to triple the budgets of all of those schools, which you would think could be kind of disheartening for some of those schools. But to their credit, they kind of understand the unique missions of our institutions and the academy. So, you know, yeah, the lacrosse conversation, you know, it's very similar to the basketball conversation where we had to make decisions months ago when the pandemic was at its height. And so we kind of reserved the right all along, just like we did in basketball, to say, hey, you know, if we want to provide the most opportunities for our kids to compete for championships, if there's an opportunity to safely expand the fields, then we would consider that. And so, you know, Army did vote against expanding the field, but it did pass. And so, you know, I share your view. I do think this is going to help. So Army is the number one, is going to win both the men's and the women's North Division. And so really it adds another game. You know, so they will, whoever we play in that the semifinal is not going to be nearly as rested as we are. So it certainly can be an advantage to us. But yeah, absolutely. It did provide an opportunity for schools who are vying for that third spot in each division, an opportunity to compete. And so the one refrain that the athletic directors in the Patriot League have had since last June was, hey, it's never going to be perfect and it's not going to be fair and equitable because everybody's going to have a different circumstance. But if we want to have our an opportunity for our kids to compete, we got to make it as good as we can. And so that was kind of the whole impetus. You know, divisions in and of itself, you know, it's not fair. The pod that we were in for men's basketball, for example, had last year's regular season champ, last year's tournament champ, and then us, and then Holy Cross, who came in dead last year. And, you know, meanwhile, the other pods did not have nearly that level of talent. And turns out our guys did pretty well and managed to be a top four seed in the tournament. And so, you know, if you look at lacrosse, you know, some would say that the Southern Division has three of the four stronger teams historically. I would argue that I think maybe three of the top five, because I think Army and BU both are historically among the top two or three as well. So, yeah, it's not perfect, but I will say that both Coach Skyra and Coach Alberisi are ready to go. And they, you know what? They've got the attitude that if we're the best team in the league, we should be able to beat all comers. And that's exactly what you hope, because that's the way those kids are going to play. So, yeah, it's a unique time to be in those rooms for sure.
That's good to hear. And if you mind, if you don't mind clearing up a question for us. So we saw that, you know, Navy got the one seed of the basketball tournament, but and they claimed a Patriot League championship. Can we dispel that rumor once and for all that Navy did not win a Patriot League regular season championship?
There's nothing to dispel.
Okay.
They were the division champion, and
right.
You know what? I am a firm believer in karma, and I don't know if you know what happened in the first round of the conference tournament.
Fair enough.
So while we're talking about Navy, Mike, you obviously have to work with good old Chet down there in Annapolis. Us on this show are not really a fan of Chet. I have not been a fan of Chet since I've been a cadet. And that was, you know, 2014 was my first year. It's 7 years ago. Obviously, you have to work with the man. Would you consider yourselves friends, frenemies, cordial? I guess, what's that relationship like?
So we are collegial.
Okay.
That's the word that we use. In all honesty, yeah, Chet was excellent to me my first year.
Okay.
You know, we are co-owners. We are co-owners of what we think is, you know, the truest, most valuable inventory in college athletics. And so we're the trustees of the Army-Navy football game. And you know, every sport at Army matters. I mean, we've got 30 varsity sports. Every cadet works their tail off. But the Army-Navy game is exceptional, and it's special. And Chet and I understand that we need to put our personal differences beside, or put them aside, and do what's best for the game and for the academies. And so for Chet to come in my first year, really kind of, you know, was able to, you know, not in a teacher to pupil kind of way, but just like, hey, let me help you get up to speed. And so it's been really good. And you know what? It's great that you're not a big fan of him. I would hope that 13 years from now, when Army has beaten Navy 14 consecutive years, I would hope that every person who does a Navy podcast hates my guts, because that just means I've done a pretty good job. And you know what, love him or hate him, you know, Chet, as I said, has been very good to me, and he's run a pretty dang good athletic department. And we hope to get them off the rails here and get the balance back towards Army in a major way.
Yeah. Well, I think we've definitely done that in football, and you know, we'll see if we can keep that momentum. I have every faith in Coach Munkin. So now we're just going to go ahead and, you know, transition to some questions from our First E Club. First E Club are some of our patrons who interact with us. And so these are some questions that they wanted to ask. We'll just kind of go rapid fire through these. First question, who is replacing Bob Beretta with scheduling?
So that'll be a dual role between Mike Harity, who is the deputy AD from external, and Dan McCarthy, who's a West Point graduate, who's another deputy athletic director. So they'll, and here's the great thing. So Bob Beretta, when he left to take over the job at Lemoyne, I think other than one football game in 2024, we are completely full until the year 2031. So we've got time.
Wow. That's amazing.
So I'm going to put a little shameless plug here. My younger brother played for the University of Central Florida. He's now at the prep school. going to be a Black Knight. Is there any way we could schedule Gus Malzahn in UCF at some point? Can we just put that out there, just, you know, in case something
speak it
drops
into existence?
Exactly.
How does 2036 sound?
we'll take what we can get. I might be available that weekend.
So honestly, that's one of the challenges, right? And you hear the ESPN talking heads talk about it. Like, literally, if we wanted to schedule a guarantee game, I do think it's like 2035 would be the first vacancy. And that was kind of the cool part about COVID is, you know, BYU and Coastal Carolina who like called each other on a Tuesday and said, hey, let's play Saturday. Like, I wish we could get back to doing that. But, you know, the TV money and the scheduling and the gamesmanship makes it really difficult to do that. But it would be pretty cool if we didn't have to go so far out in the future.
Yeah, for sure. James, next question.
Yeah, so this is a big question. I think you've pretty much answered it with the scheduling question, but this is something that I go back and forth on all the time. The prospects of Army joining a conference. So if we're scheduled through 2035 or something like that, that would be a lot of contracts to buy out of if Army joined a conference. So I think that answers our question. But has that been something that you've thought of in the past? You know, the fact that we're not in a conference now means that, you know, we're never going to get that Cotton Bowl slot. And where do you see that going?
Yeah, I mean, it's my job to think about it. We're right where we're meant to be. There's no reason for us to join a conference. You know, as an independent, we have flexibility in our scheduling. And here's what I honestly believe. I think the college football playoff is going to expand to eight teams. I think the Power Five are each going to get a guaranteed spot. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the at-larges is going to go to a Group of Five team. And so right now, we can't necessarily go to the Cotton Bowl unless a ton of dominoes fell in the right direction. But I do feel like in the Group of Five, if we can stay where we are right now and continue to get better every year, us going 12-0 is not outside the realm of possibility in a lot of years. It may not happen in the year that we play Wisconsin, but people said that the year that we had Michigan and the year that we had Oklahoma, and we were one snap away from winning both of those games. And so, you know, our plan is to continue to be an independent football program and to put ourselves in a position where when that happens in the college football playoff, we don't have to be better than LSU. We just have to be better than Cincinnati and Central Florida and teams like that, which, you know what, we played Houston a couple of years ago and they're pretty dang good. But if you're not prepared to play our style of football, anything can happen.
Yeah, and I guess as a fan, my concern would be if they do what you think they'll do and expand to eight, which I hope that they do, you know, is it going to be something similar where instead of just an at-large for a Group of Five teams, the committee is going to have to pick, the best Group of Five champion like they do now? And if they go that route, then Army would still be excluded unless they can be one of the best, you know, seven teams in the country, which seems unlikely that the committee would rank us there.
Absolutely. Yep. It'll be a challenge.
Okay.
All right. So completely different direction. Biggest sports rivalry, Yankees versus Red Sox or Army versus Navy?
Army versus Navy. And I'll tell you, and I'll tell you why. And again, okay, you know, it's punctuation around here, right? It's like, hey, good morning, beat Navy. Good afternoon, beat Navy. Maybe it's like beat Navy. Good morning, beat Navy. but in talking about, you know, what the rest of the world talks about Army Navy, and again, Saturday is going to be an absolute bloodbath in lacrosse, and it's going to be a phenomenal game. Army Navy football happens once a year. You know, the Red Sox Yankees, what do we play 24 times a year? And so it's just more difficult. Now the fan bases are pretty rabid, and you know, playing that often gives you that much more opportunity to get fans that hate each other. But, you know, Army Navy, it's different. It's not millionaires playing millionaires on TV. It's
right. Yep.
You know, warriors playing warriors on TV. So Army Navy, no question.
And then I have a follow-on question there, Mike. So speaking of the Yankees, like Dan, I'm a lifelong Yankees fan and I come from the New York area. And I have a lot of friends that, you know, grew up in Long Island and surrounding New York City, and they don't really have a college team to root for in football. And there was an advertisement up in the left field stands in Yankee Stadium for the longest time that said Syracuse, New York's college team. And it really ticked me off because Syracuse is a 5-hour drive for Manhattan, right? And West Point's up the river. And when I was a cadet, one of the things they harped on all the time was our relationship with New York City. Yet it seemed like the athletic department never wanted to sell football tickets to New York City. They never wanted to get people from Manhattan up to the games. And I understand that with COVID, that's all been put on pause. But how do you see that relationship going forward with the city? How do you see, you know, West Point becoming, you know, New York City's college football team?
Yeah, so that's a priority. And thanks for giving me the platform to talk about it. So we strategically partnered with Legends Hospitality, which, you know, was one of the companies that Mr. Steinbrenner helped found because he wanted an exceptional experience. And so he and Jerry Jones founded this company because they basically said no one does hospitality the way it needs to be done at Yankees and Cowboys games. And so we partnered with them, A, because they have an office in Midtown Manhattan. B, they understand the metropolitan market. And so as we continue to raise money behind the scenes for the Mike East Stands project, one of the things that we are pitching is the fact that right now there's Fortune 500 companies that buy a suite to Jets and Giants games because they can entertain clients and right. You know, yep. It's a high end, you know, marble finish. And well, there is nothing like that. Like, right. Mike East Stadium's kind of it's the Wrigley Field of college football. You know, there's ivy on the wall and the toilets, they might work, they might not work. You know, we don't sell craft beers and things like that. But when we renovate the East Stands, we're going to have suites and we're going to have a club area and we're going to have craft beer. And so we want to be able to, you know, right now the Thayer Leader Development Group out of New York, the Thayer Hotel here, they bring corporate retreats up here and they'll kind of spend a Thursday and Friday feeling like West Pointers for a couple of days, but then they get in their cars and they go back home. And what we want to do is capitalize off that. And that's where Legends is going to come in and do a similar effort and have a sports themed experience. And it culminates in coming to Mike East Stadium. And as those of you who have been here before, you really only have to come to Mike East Stadium once to kind of get it. And then we hope to kind of keep, I don't know if we're going to take out an advertisement in left field of Yankee Stadium. I actually think that I gave up a home run to Edgar Martinez that went off of that sign. So I can't thank you enough for bringing that back up. I may not.
Good job, James. Thanks.
Yeah. You know, I work in Manhattan and it drives me crazy because, you know, I talk about Army football all the time. I love Army football and man, sometimes it's like speaking another language and I would love to see more people embrace it. Just around town.
I don't think people realize that it's only 40 miles up the road.
That's definitely true.
I always thought it would be by Syracuse.
I always thought it would be a great time if I was living in New York City to take like a booze cruise up the Hudson, get off and then go to an Army football game.
It would be. Let me know which game you want to come up.
Well, I will be in Arlington for Army Air Force this year. So.
Oh, that's going to be awesome.
Yeah, I'm excited.
Hey, and FYI, you will see the orange on our on future schedules. So,
okay.
Oh, good.
We'll have to put our money where our mouth is.
Is there going to be like a State of New York trophy established here?
You know what? I think that's a great idea. We need to develop
an Empire State trophy or something along the lines of that.
Love it.
So, there? Go ahead, Dan.
No, I was just going to ask, as long as we're talking about the schedule, you know, questions that I personally get a lot are, you know, is Oklahoma going to get rescheduled? What's going on with BYU? Obviously, it sounds like the schedule's packed. So what's going on?
And can you give us some like the insider information on what really happened with BYU? Spill a little tea. Like, yeah. I'm sick and tired of hearing all those people talk about how we chickened out because I don't think that's true.
Yeah, so I'm trying to remember all the questions. You got to ask one at a time. You guys.
Oh, sorry.
I just turned 50. It's Friday afternoon. I may or may not have a beer next to me. Oh. No. So yeah, BYU was great, right? So you know that was a perfect example of Coach Munkin saying, "Hey, we play whoever we can play," and BYU had the exact same attitude, and they proved it, you know, on the field. And they called the week. They had an issue, and you know, you can't. It was a matter of time until everybody had an issue. And unfortunately, right. It was early in the season where, you know, no one really kind of was sure what the repercussions were going to be. You know, the myocarditis was happening. And so, you know, unfortunately, they were unable to make it. The only week that really kind of worked for both of us was the week before the Army-Navy game.
Yeah.
And for us, that we didn't want to commit to that because we weren't sure what Air Force was going to do. And if we lost the Air Force game, which ironically we ended up doing, we needed that open date to be able to play Air Force and Navy. We had to protect the commander in chief. And so we have rescheduled those games. Unfortunately, they're kind of far out into the future. Mm. And same with Oklahoma. We're trying to find a date earlier than, you know, when I'm a grandfather, but it's just really difficult for them and for us. You know, the Oklahoma folks were fantastic, as were BYU. They just kind of, he wanted to do it as soon as possible, but it's hard to break a contract with a team that you've already got a signed, delivered contract on. So we'll keep working to try to make sure that we play it. And I hope that I'm still alive for it.
You know, for what it's worth, the Big 12, they seem to be willing to play Army, you know, when and where under the most circumstances out of a lot of these Power Five conferences.
Yeah. And you know what, it just depends on the coach. You know, a lot of coaches that have been around the block. So Lincoln Riley, who actually has not been around the block, was very excited. And Joe Castiglione, the athletic director, you know, they were going to come up 2 days early because they thought it was important that their football team experience West Point. They understand what our kids are doing and why they're doing it so that they can play in the NFL. You know, they were going to do tours and their fans were going to do the booze cruise up. And so, you know, they were really disappointed and they had the exact right attitude. And to come up here, you know, 2 years after almost losing to us at home and not complain about it and not try to buy out the game. They just said, hey, it's important that our kids understand what West Point is, the history and the commitment that these kids make. So, you know, it was a shame, but this stupid pandemic, it's like it had no feelings for the rest of us.
Yeah.
So I think we're sort of getting towards the end, but I would like to ask a little bit about the Mikey renovations. I know I went on the website and figured out which box I wanted to buy. Can you sort of talk us? What's that?
Just one box?
Oh, unfortunately, I'm in for just one. Yeah.
Well, he has to shell out $120 million for the pool. Like,
no, that's true. One box. I have, in all honesty, I've talked to some of my classmates about maybe buying a bigger box as a class. We'll just see how that works out. But I'm curious to know like what the timeline is and how that's going.
Yeah, thanks for asking. So, you know, we kind of had to go back to the drawing board for two reasons. One was, you know, Boo Corrigan, who started the project, had kind of designed it. We were probably halfway through the approval process. And then he got the opportunity to go down to NC State,
right,
which I was thrilled about because it gave me the opportunity to come here. And then COVID hit. And so we hit pause. You know, that just certainly wasn't the time to ask people for money. And so really it's a two-phase project. One phase is the East Stands, which will completely knock down the East Stands. We'll build a modern facility. It'll feel like Cameron Indoor Stadium in terms of the cadets will stretch from goal line to goal line all the way across.
Oh, wow.
We'll actually reduce the stadium capacity by about 2,000 seats. And then above the cadets will be some loge boxes, club seats with a club, an actual club area, and then 18 luxury suites on the top floor. And so we're trying to keep the height of the building relatively consistent to where it is right now so that, you know, the top rows in the West Stands can currently see, you know, Lusk Reservoir and all that stuff. And as I've learned, there's a lot of architectural standards that really have to be met at West Point, as there should be, right, to keep the look and
right.
the feel of
yep.
post as beautiful as it is. And so we are, we got to the 50% design concept phase. We've done the quiet phase of fundraising. We think the stands themselves will be between $90 and $100 million.
Wow.
We've got about $60 million already committed. And so we're finalizing to make sure that the pricing that we're throwing out there is accurate before we put it in print. But we're hoping in the next 3 months or so that we will finalize the look and get it out there publicly, knowing that we've already raised at least 60 to 70% of what we need to get it out there. And then phase two that we're kind of put on the back burner is an office building that really we have to replace who's currently in the East stands. They'll get kicked out. So the men's and women's lacrosse coaches, our ticket office and our sponsorship partners. So we'll have to recreate offices and as well for the rest of the athletic department, but that's not nearly as urgent. That's not going to generate revenue the way that the East stands is. So it'll be awesome. I mean, you know, we've had NHL teams want to come do winter classics at Mikey Stadium, right. But we can't because we have to winterize the entire stadium. It's an old building. And if we don't turn off all the water, so we can't have toilets and so therefore we can't have a game. This will put all that to rest. We'll be able to host NHL games and, you know, wedding receptions and all those great things in a very unique venue. So we're excited to get this done.
That'll be amazing. I can't tell you the number of times I've had hockey fans tell me that they wanted to see an NHL game played at Mikey Stadium. I mean, it must have been 100.
Well, and you know, two of our old grads own NHL hockey teams, and so you know, it'd be great to be able to host their teams in an NHL matchup at Mikey Stadium. It'd be pretty historic and pretty awesome.
Awesome. That'd be James, you want to take us out?
Yeah. So last question that I have, you know, obviously we know that Ben Holden will not be returning as the play-by-play announcer next year. Do you have any idea who CBS Sports is sending to Mikey next year that we're going to hear on game days?
I do not. So that is a CBS decision. Obviously Ben's the best. We love him. We miss him. But no, I don't, I've not been given that information at this point. It won't be me.
Well, Mike, it has been an absolute pleasure having you on. And I just got to say, you know, as a fan, I feel very confident in the direction of Army Athletics. I feel like ever since you've taken over, it has been a different, you know, feel to the athletic department, just the way, you know, you interact with fans on Twitter and social media and the things you guys push out. And, you know, even just the memorabilia and stuff, it seems like you guys are really being proactive and really seeking to engage with the current fan base, as well as expand the fan base for the future. So on behalf of us at Ask for Football and the Army fan base, thank you for being on the show today. And thank you for all that you do and will continue to do for Army Athletics.
Absolutely, guys. It's been a blast. I appreciate you having me on.
Thank you, sir.
It was our pleasure.
That was a fantastic interview. You know, thanks again to Mike Buddy for taking the time to come on with us. Dan, it sounds like you have a lot of money to raise. $120 million. I don't want to, you know, rain on your parade, but I don't know if your wife's fitness studio is going to be pulling that in. What's your plan?
Definitely going to have to get an expansion here to raise that. I think I'm going to do is I'm going to get like a bucket, you know, like a Salvation Army bucket and a sign. I'm just going to stand outside the game and let people dump $120 million into my bucket. I don't know how else to do it. That's
you
a
need
lot
to get a little
money.
Bell. I think if you had the bell, I think that would really kind of bring the whole outfit together.
Oh man. But I'll be in my Speedo. So, you know, at least you'll be paying for something.
Well, paying you to put something on.
So. That was a great interview, though.
Yeah, it was awesome. And, you know, we have not told him this yet, but we're going to have him back on in the future. So thanks again to Mike. Thanks to our firsties and thanks to our patrons in our firstie club who submitted a lot of those questions. You know, they get to hear and see content before anyone else, and they get to contribute to what we put out. So
yeah, they're going to hear this recording. Sorry, Jordan. They're going to hear this recording before the Army Navy game or lacrosse game.
Yeah. Well, they probably will. So if you want to be in the inside circle, make sure to join the, Firstie Club and become a patron, as well as supporting Emblem Athletic. Without them, this would not be possible. So Dan, do you have a favorite thing this week, or we going right to commercial?
Let's go to commercial. Let's just beat them.
All right. Beat Navy.
Beat them.
Navy.